There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Boy, things have gotten really weird.
Yeah, it almost seems like every day you don't know what to expect. So we are going to try and help get you through it.
I'm Charles Feldman.
And I'm Mike Simpson, and we're the hosts of the new podcast, Coronavirus Daily. We bring in some of the top experts all around the world to ask the questions that you have.
Because we are all in this together, and you know what? We are all going to survive this together.
Again, Coronavirus Daily on the radio.com app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher.
Doctor's log, hell date 2020. It's 7 a.m. I just ended my shift in the emergency room and now I am headed out. I grew up watching Star Trek reruns as a kid, and in the intro to Star Trek, they have this description of their mission, which is to go where no man has gone before. Right now, health and medical industries are on that kind of mission, and it really feels like my colleagues and I are embarking on this new journey as we stand on the front lines of the COVID crisis. We keep saying to each other, we've never done this before. We've never seen anything like this on this scale before. And so I wanted to capture some of this journey. So I'm starting my own captain's log. I'll be documenting my personal experiences and thoughts as this pandemic unfolds around us. I'm Esther Chu, MD, and this is my doctor's log. Go subscribe on radio.com and wherever you get your podcasts.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, this is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. Sports Radio 670 The Score, radio.com sports station, WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by Phoenix Industrial Cleaning.
The Dan Bernstein Show, weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
In a book titled Michael and Me, Our Gambling Addiction, Richard Esquinas, a one-time general manager of the San Diego Sports Arena, makes the claim that Michael Jordan owed him more than $1.2 million, a result of gambling on their golf matches.
Yeah, Richard Esquinas, we met from a third party. You know, I'm actually playing golf with people all the time now. And if they want to gamble, we gamble. The character of those individuals, I find out later what kind of people I was playing with. I learned that lesson. But the act of gambling, I didn't do anything wrong.
I mean, right away went right to the most deepest, darkest kind of side of it, that is he throwing games?
Has it gone beyond golf?
Never has. Michael and I were competitive and gambling on the golf course. We played cards. You know, I was in many of the card games. But never anything else.
I never bet on games. I only bet on myself. You know, and that was golf. Do I like to play blackjack? Yeah, I like playing blackjack. There's no laws with that.
I can stop anytime I want. Interesting tone from Michael Jordan that we heard. Some revisitation of some controversial stuff in episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance on ESPN. The voices you heard, Richard Esquinas, Michael Jordan, and Melissa Isaacson, who joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. You can follow Missy on Twitter at MKIsaacson, now a professor at Northwestern's Medill School of Journalism, and is with us on The Score. Hi, Missy, how are you?
Good, Dan. How are you?
I'm all right. What did you think of...
Serious.
Oh, I know. it was. There are some people that just don't remember. There was a time when everybody felt differently about gambling, where everything, gambling now, sports gambling, is mainstreamed and destigmatized and okay. It wasn't then. It was considered salacious and seedy and sinful and ugly. And even, you know, David Stern would get hives anytime gambling had anything to do with it. So it was really remarkable how differently we looked at the whole idea of gambling itself.
I think you're absolutely right. It was just, he went to Atlantic City. And, you know, those of us like you probably laughed a little bit because, you know, he was playing 72 holes of golf, you know, on off days during the playoffs and in Arizona and, you know, wherever he can get him in. So, in the whole thing, it was even more than gambling. It was like, isn't he tired? Like, how is he playing? You know, how is he up till 2 or 3 in the morning? I don't know. That part I thought was a little weird. It was like just as serious as the gambling was that he was up late.
What did you think of how it came across? And I know you sat and you talked for a long time with these producers and directors, but what did you think of the presentation of the stuff in which you were involved?
I thought overall the whole thing is great, and I was sort of in a blur during my part because I had my hands over my eyes because I'm half kidding. I felt when I was interviewed like a year ago that I wanted to, I was, it was a weird feeling of like not remembering what they wanted me to remember and remembering other things that I wish I would have been part of, like, you know, some of the, not fun stuff necessarily, but big picture. Like I could have told a million stories, and they were very patient with me. I was kind of a goof. I think I was really not a great interview. And so, you know, so I was like, what did I say? Okay. But I think overall, it seems like they were very fair about the gambling thing. I don't know. I don't really, we certainly covered it. Okay. And here's my memory of it. I remember him being really, really upfront in terms of making time for me and Mulligan and Kent, you know, making sure that he sat down with us. And I remember it vividly, you know, him sitting down with us and really answering every single question. He wasn't there every single day for every single question. But once he did decide, after the Esquinas thing, I'm probably not pronouncing it right, he did talk about that. And then, you know, he sent his father out to talk about the stuff, you know, in Atlantic City. And I thought his father was really wonderfully touching as I look back at it. And I remember that also really well. There's some things I don't remember, but I do remember standing in the rain with his dad and his dad sort of almost begging us to like let him out of the fishbowl. You know, it was sort of too late obviously for that, but you know, just sort of talking about he has a competition problem. I thought it was really interesting that Michael used that exact phrase that his father used, because I thought it was really fitting. I never really heard Michael say that before, and I just wonder if he remembered that his dad said it or, you know, if he read that or something. But I think that's actually really fitting. He was obsessed with competition to the point where, you know, if he's going to the front of the plane and playing dollar blackjack to take dollars off of Will Perdue, you know, that's a bit of an obsessiveness. I think we can all agree. But clearly that also made him the player and the competitor he was on the court. So you have to take both. And I thought he was really upfront in the documentary. I thought he really explained himself, you know, well as he ever has.
I think something they did a pretty good job of communicating, and it was something that I've tried to explain, is how the on-court success went so far to redeem everything else that he was able, under his power, to make the other things not matter because of what would actually happen on the court and during games. That ability to control his world in those moments that we'd chase around these other stories. You know, we'd be on the road in the playoffs and, you know, Michael, we went to Atlantic City, or there was the, you know, I remember when I was on the beat, there was a day in Orlando when it's like 95 degrees out. And he literally, like you say, 72 holes of golf, a ridiculous amount. Like I'd be sore after, you know, playing 9 and this guy's out there and then staying out late and gambling and then coming games. But when the game started, when he had to do what he had to do, it was there. And it wasn't always, especially during the second three-peat, he wasn't always at the peak of his powers. You know,
no.
He would have some bad shooting nights. He would have some struggles, and there were some slogs in there that people don't forget. But just like B.J. Armstrong said, it's almost like he wasn't playing a basketball as much as he was moving the pieces around however he had to do to win the game. And I think they've done a good job communicating and describing those self-contained moments that the games became that had nothing to do with anything else.
Yeah, no, his ability to control and, you know, and the Bradford Smith things and just getting creating these dramas and proving us wrong or proving whoever it was that he just found things to make him better. But one thing I stumbled on that I almost forgot, it was really interesting. In the 93 season, before he retired, he was having a really kind of bad stretch, like actually sort of a long stretch there, 28-15. And he was shooting really badly in the second half. And all of a sudden, it wasn't there for him. And he wasn't hitting the clutch shots. And he was and everybody was grumbling. Everybody was unhappy. And Scotty about his contract situation. And Horace was underpaid. And everybody was starting to say, oh, here we go again. And I don't know if you remember, it was an Orlando game. He attempted 49 shots, 49 shots as a career high. And it was seven more than the rest of the starting lineup combined. And they had lost to Orlando. And everybody was bitching at him, saying, like, here we go again. Here's Michael. And that is when the first little bits that I recall, because I was looking back, when he said, you know what? I'm, like, basically out of here. Like, this is not fun. They weren't practicing hard. He started later in my book, when I interviewed him in Birmingham, he said that was the time when he started telling his teammates, you know what? You're not going to have me around anymore. I'm out of here. And they're like, yeah, Michael, you've been drinking. Like, absolutely not. He's like, no, you'll see. You're going to need me, and I'm not going to be here. And I think all of a sudden it was like he couldn't control it for a very brief time, and that's when he left. And I'm not saying that's the entire reason, but he was feeling really out of sorts and out of control. And then obviously when his dad was killed, you know, that's completely out of his control. I'm being amateur psychologist for sure, but I feel like he was trying to run away from his grief a little bit too. And it all caught up with him in Birmingham. And I when I talked to him there, I had a strong feeling that he was going to come back, because it's easy for me to say now, but I really did, because he talked about this Wesley Snipes movie that he was watching and that he was just bawling because the character lost his father and he couldn't stop crying. And he was calling all of his friends and his mom, and he couldn't stop crying. And that's not a Michael that we knew, certainly not that I had ever seen. And so at that point, I felt like he knew he needed to sort of gather it back up again and get back in control again. And that was, you know, can't cover everything in that documentary. I wish they would have asked me stuff about that. And maybe they did, and that was just brutal. You know, I may have been lame about, you know, remembering stuff like that. It's starting to come back to me as we all start talking about it. I'm like, oh, yeah. So it's interesting. I don't know if you're finding that. You're not finding that because you've got the memory from, I don't know. You've got the best memory anyone I've ever known. Yeah.
No, we had some late nights in some of those hotel bars during some of those playoff runs and probably burned away half of the memories. But there's an aspect to this, too, that, you know, just personally, and I think you probably share this also, as things got really crazy in those three seasons, especially the Rodman influence, just cranked everything to 11. The level of stupid, the level of silly, the level of weird, I mean, which is really one of my the least favorite aspects of doing the job involved covering Dennis Rodman. But I loved the juxtaposition. I love the juxtaposition with Steve Kerr. And having Kerr around was such a blessing, because he was the guy after every practice. Remember, he'd shoot free throws. And he would come out, and he had those giant ice packs that were plastic wrapped around his knees because of patellar tendonitis. Saran wrapped giant ice packs, you know, these see-through things on both his knees after every single practice. And he was always the last guy there. And he was like this oasis of sanity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he didn't have any ego. There was no big timing. Talk about answering every question. You know, for us, when we needed content, we needed somebody to talk to, it just became this touchstone of, oh, here's a normal person who can say normal person things. He happens to be on the Bulls. He happens to be making critical championship-winning shots, but it's his normal person. And I wonder if that's going to come across at all. As things got so wild and weird, he was always there.
I hope. I mean, I really hope that, you know, I know he's really shy and sort of, you know, sheepish about it, more than sheepish. He's, like, mortified that, you know, his pictures in the ad and stuff, although he certainly was a very important player, we all know. But, yeah, I think he did. We did. It's so funny. We did gravitate toward him because he was normal. I told this story a couple times before, but, you know, when I was writing my book in the earlier, in between the 2 three-peats, and I went into his hotel room to interview him. And, you know, he's Steve Kerr, and he was great. And so, you know, it's probably not the first time at all. And I walked out, and Bill Cartwright was standing in the hallway, and he's just staring at me, and he's like, "What are you doing?" And I go, "What do you mean?" He goes, What are you doing in a man's hotel room?" And I go, "What? It's Steve Kerr." And he goes, "Don't do that. You know what the others will think." And I'm like, "It's Steve Kerr." And he's like, but yeah, I knew exactly what he meant, but you know what I meant. I mean, he was the perfect gentleman. He was, I want to spend hours with him. I want to spend days with him because he was so smart and so great. And so, yeah, I used to get irritated, and I wasn't the beat writer during the Rodman years, but I felt like they were letting him get away with stuff, and it was weird, and like, what is Michael doing? And Pippen, from afar, I kind of thought, that I wasn't really afar, but I wasn't with them every single day. And as it happens, that's the cool stuff that I like seeing behind the scenes, that I knew they were, you know, walking on eggshells, that they knew what they were doing sort of with him to get the most out of him, because he was such a unique character. You know, remember he burst out crying? I remember one time Lacey and I were talking to him, and he just started crying, and he was very sensitive. He was very likable in that regard in those moments, and Phil knew exactly what he had, and he just, you know, they just wanted the most out of him, sort of selfishly as much as anything. So I think that's fascinating how they treated him and how they got the most out of him. And I think to this day he loves them. I don't think he has anything bad to say. Why would he? Won 3 more rings.
We're talking with Melissa Isaacson on Sports Radio 670 The Score. She covered the Bulls and Chicago sports for a long time. She is the author of a book, State, A Team, A Triumph, A Transformation, and it is the story of the 1975 and Niles West High School women's basketball team, and it's a fascinating look, a personal look from your part. How's the book doing, and are the rumors of a movie actually true?
That's so nice you bring it up. You just made me 4 years older, but that's okay. Well, I was in high school in 1975, but and it was. You weren't wrong. It's about that, but it's the state championship was won in 79. And it was to the TV thing. I do have people interested. They're seemingly very enthusiastic about the story. Apparently the story hasn't been told of this first generation of girls post Title IX, which is really weird to me from that voice of women and young teenage girls who were discovering themselves and getting access to these life lessons for the first time. I mean, when I look back, you know, kids, your son played Little League, your daughter obviously played sports, you played when you're 6 years old. When I was growing up, boys were, you know, sent to Little League, and you just learned inherently these lessons about setting goals and sacrificing for the good of the team and being a good teammate and a good follower, and maybe you're a good leader and negotiating and strategizing, and boom, like, what a coincidence that boys developed these skills that would later serve them well when they went into business and all these other things that women, just frankly, we didn't get that, and then all of a sudden we did, and the whole world opened up to us. And it's really a coming of age story more than a basketball book, and my favorite part's the end, because I talk about what happened to us as adults and how it directly correlated to what we were being taught and what we were learning for the first time ever in high school. So thanks for letting me say that. We beat Jackie Joyner's team. It's still my claim to fame in a state title game. I throw that out whenever I can. Yeah.
Be honest, as if in fact there's going to be some sort of visual interpretation TV movie. Have you been casting? Do you know who's going to play young Missy Isaacson? Have you been, like, in your mind's eye? Have you been figuring out the ideal actors for this?
Well, I mean, you know, it's dating me also. I would like to consult with your daughter to find out who's cool, but she's got to have a jump shot, like, and a way better one than me. So I don't know how many young actresses, you know, period, and then some that have a jump shot. I wouldn't mind, like, you know, Serena Ionescu or somebody, but, like, she's about, you know, 10 inches bigger than me and, you know, 60 pounds heavier than me. In the movie, though, I will be taking the game-winning shot to win the state championship. So it does have to be someone who's really good. It won't be Connie Erickson, who actually was the star of our team. It'll be me. So, I don't know. If somebody comes up with it, it's got to be someone, yeah. My husband wants to play the principal. He's going to have a cameo.
Write him in. Absolutely. Look, if you can, they say that the history is people who write the history books have the control over this. And if you're going to write it, it can end up being however you wanted it to be. So this is I look forward to seeing it, and great catching up as always, Missy. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it.
Melissa Isaacson, former reporter and columnist, and now a journalism professor at Northwestern's Medill School. Coming up, I want to talk about an aspect of The Last Dance that you might have found interesting or unique. If you saw the scene in which Michael Jordan and one of his security staff are pitching quarters, because Jordan just had to do that too, and you saw John Michael Wozniak actually beat Jordan and then taunt him with the shrug, and he was around all the time. Everybody always saw John Michael Wozniak. And Matt Fortuna of The Athletic wrote a wonderful story about the recently deceased former Jordan security guard and their relationship and what it meant and how it came together. So Matt Fortuna is going to tell us all about that. He's going to join us next. I'm Dan Bernstein, and you have The Score.
Hello, fitness friend.
Tonight at 7, The Score will replay Terry Bohr's final show before retirement. Recorded live January 5th, 2017 from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage at The Score Studios.
Just tired of you, dumbass.
Starring a jam-packed lineup of Score hosts from the past and present.
I've closed out the number of these shows with Dan saying that everybody have a great night and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Well, I won't be talking to you tomorrow. I won't be talking to you again.
Don't miss Terry Bohr's final show, re-airing tonight at 7, right here on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's sports station.
I'm mad at all of you!
This segment is brought to you by AmeriPro Roofing, standards through the roof.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn. Ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn. Tell people to stay off the lawn. Compare it to your neighbor's lawn. And complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
This is Damon Amendolara with your Radio.com Sports Minute. Don Shula passed away at the age of 90 yesterday, and you can't overstate the impact of his legacy. There are two teams that NFL historians roundly agree vie for the title of best ever: the 72 Dolphins and the 85 Bears. Shula coached one of them and beat the other. Miami was the only team in 85 to figure out a way to solve the Bears' 46 defense. It was built around Dan Marino's lightning-quick read and release against the unblockable blitzes the Bears were unleashing. Shula's teams were run-based in the 70s and air-based in the 80s and 90s, a coach that adjusted and evolved with the times and his personnel. Don Shula, the most wins for any coach ever. R.I.P. This is Damon Amendolara.
Hi. No. The backyard is back. A place to get a breath of fresh air and get together with the family. The Home Depot is here to help you create the backyard you've always wanted. With premium, low-maintenance composite decking and fencing from brands like Trex, Fiberon, TimberTech, and Veranda. and hundreds of other options to bring your backyard back to life this year. Order online, and we're on it. The Home Depot. How doers get more done. U.S. only. Restrictions apply.
Did you know there are over 1,000 podcasts on Radio.com? Download the app or head to Radio.com to listen to all your favorite national and local podcasts, including your favorite morning shows and radio shows on demand. At the top of the app homepage, click the podcast icon to discover new shows, subscribe, and manage your podcast subscriptions. Go to your app store or Radio.com/download for all your podcast listening. Radio.com.
Switch to Sprint and get our best unlimited deal ever. Four lines of unlimited for just $100 a month. If that's not enough, we're throwing in four Samsung Galaxy phones on us. Shop from the comfort of your home at Sprint.com, call 800-SPRINT-1, or come see us in our stores. Phone after $35.42 per month credit for 18 months credit. Apply within two bills. If canceled early, remaining balance due. Unlimited basic after 7/31/21. Pay $35 per month per line with auto pay. Data deprioritization during congestion. Coverage and offer not available everywhere. Excludes taxes, fees, and roaming. Speed maximums, use rules, $30 activation fee, and restrictions apply.
Bears head coach Matt Nagy.
Thank you to our amazing first responders and EMS, our state, city, and county police, as well as our brave firemen and women for being so selfless and saving so many lives during this extremely challenging time. Waking up every day and doing everything in your power to help control this COVID-19 is nothing short of heroic. From all of us here in the Chicago Bears organization, we thank you for your courage. Together, as one, we will prevail. I look forward to it. Bear down.
The Score is helping Chicago stay connected. For more, go to radio.com/stayconnected.
Life has changed almost overnight.
Yeah, you have a lot of questions. We are going to try to get you some answers. I'm Mike Simpson.
And I'm Charles Feldman. Together, we host Coronavirus Daily, a podcast designed to help us all get through this crisis together.
We go around the world and talk to some of the top experts out there. So think of this as a guide for you and your family. Multiple ways to listen: radio.com, the radio.com app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher.
Remember, that's Coronavirus Daily.
This is a test of the emergency alert system.
This station is participating in the test of the Illinois Emergency Alert System. This system was developed to provide information to the public during emergencies. This was a test.
This is a coordinated monthly test of the broadcast stations in your area. Equipment that can quickly warn you during emergencies is being tested. If this had been an actual emergency, official messages would have followed the alert tone. The Score serves the Northeast Illinois EAS local area. This concludes this test of the emergency alert system.
What? Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thanks for streaming The Score. Chicago Sports Radio 670.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon.
Dick Butkus on Doug Buffon.
If we would have won collectively as a team more games during his career, at least I'm positive that he would have been an All-Pro and would have played in the Pro Bowl, and I would even put Obradovich in that category. They were that good. You know, and sometimes being recognized depends on how well your team does also. Green Bay, they had Leroy Caffey and Dave Robinson outside of Nitschke, and so they, as corners, you know, they would say, well, you know, you're going to put up Doug against them people, and deep down I would say, what he accomplished for us, I would say yes, but you're taking in the account that, you know, these teams won a lot and often. You know, a lot of guys do not get recognized by that fact.
Dan Bernstein, weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I give y'all four tries to beat mine. One toss.
One toss?
Yeah.
And four tries?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Okay, put your money up first. Well, I've seen it.
How much? $20?
Yep.
You can beat that.
Four tries. Come on back here.
Give it. Hey, yeah, CT.
Hey, man, your stuff rolls. You see how here just roll up there?
See, watch this roll right in my pocket. I got good at this.
Yeah, y'all get the hell out of here. Go protect the damn United Center. Security! Yes, come get security out of here.
Calling security on security. Michael Jordan would do that when somebody actually pitches a quarter closer to the wall to take some of your money. That's some of the most fun stuff that we've seen when he's just kind of letting it down. And like what Sam Smith talked about on this show, just sort of being the overgrown frat boy that he was. That's when Jordan was at his happiest, just doing that kind of stuff with his buds. And his security people were indeed his friends. And that was John Michael Wozniak is the noticeable one with that, what he calls his lion's mane of hair. To me, it looks more like ramen noodles than a lion's mane, but I guess it's not quite as regal or majestic to describe it in the way of Asian soup. So let's talk about the guy that wrote the story on that man for The Athletic. He's Matt Fortuna. He is on Twitter at @Matt_Fortuna. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Matt, how are you today?
Doing well, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. What compelled you to write the story that you did and to tell it in that way? Because, you know, I didn't know it. I was around him forever, and he was just that guy that you saw. And I didn't know the backstory entirely until I read what you wrote. It was really good.
Appreciate it. Yeah. What didn't compel me, I think, is a better question, right? The guy was so fascinating, and clearly you knew the minute Sunday night you saw him do the shrug after beating Michael that this guy was going to be, at the very least, a meme, right? Like, we have no sports right now. Like, Sunday night, The Last Dance, one of the great, I think, parts of having this air every Sunday and not being able to binge it is because it's been this almost, like, communal experience that we're all going through and taking in together as if it's a Super Bowl or a big game every Sunday. And we're all Monday morning quarterbacking the show all across the country, it seems like, as well. So with that in mind, I mean, as entertaining and as awesome as the show has been, I don't know if there's been a whole lot newsiness stuff to come out of it, right? But you saw a guy like that, and I immediately start wondering, that seems really interesting. This guy's obviously going to be trending on Twitter. Who is he? What's his background? And Jordan's manager, Esty Portnoy, it tweeted not long after that segment aired, hey, this guy's name is John Wozniak. He died in January. You know, my first thoughts were, well, that's very unfortunate. But, you know, my second thoughts as a reporter were, okay, you know, what's his background? So I Googled his obituary, and I saw that he was buried in Oak Lawn, which is where all my in-laws are from. And a big Irish family. And you know how it is down there. If you know one of them, you know all of them. So I started texting a couple cousins, seeing if they knew the family or anything. And sure enough, a few of them did. One of them knew one of the sons and was able to pass along the number to me. And so I texted Nikolai probably 11, 12 o'clock at night, you know, kind of out of the blue, hoping against hope that he might respond. And sure enough, he responded immediately and said, you know, absolutely call me right now. I'm really pumped up. It's been so fun to see my dad get his due. And we were on the phone for at least an hour, just going down memory lane. The guy could not have been nicer. He could not have been more genuinely thrilled, I think, to see his old man who existed in the shadows, if you will, for much of his career, at least, you know, outside of the spotlight, the guy behind the guy, if you will, to see him finally getting his due, I think was a real, real thrill for the family.
To me, it's the backstory, too, that's fascinating about how it was Wozniak's admission of a mistake that really endeared him to Michael Jordan when he first had to do something as mundane as parking his car, and it didn't go well.
That's hilarious, right? Like, you cannot make that part up. That's something that's, like, out of a Seinfeld or Curb Your Enthusiasm episode. Like, the marriage made in heaven, right? The odd couple. The relationship started basically out of an error, but the honesty that came through that error. And I think, you know, Michael Jordan at that time, his rookie year, maybe his second year, wasn't quite as big as we knew him to be in the ensuing years, but was still big enough where I think he probably had only so many people in this new city that he could trust and rely on. And when he has a security officer slash narcotics officer come up to him and voluntarily admit his wrongdoing and offer to pay for that wrongdoing, I think Jordan really appreciated that. And I think just over the years, when he's coming into the stadium game after game after game and seeing so many familiar faces, that helped to fill up an affinity, if you will, for this guy. And the relationship really took off from there.
Yeah, he actually he backed the Jordan's SUV into an overhang that he didn't see and smashed the back windshield. And had to, you can only imagine, like you say, you
hear I mean, the get enthusiasm. Excited just thinking of that. Yeah.
Oh God! You hear the Calliope music playing the moment it happens, and then they forge this relationship after that little meet cute there. But it, to me, it's also the layers of the story. How Chicago it is in this regard. This is a Polish guy from Mount Greenwood who is a tactical and narcotics cop during some really difficult and violent times, who ends up marrying a black woman. And they're the cultural aspects of this, and some of the things that I kept reading the story, kept saying this really, it kept getting more interesting in so many ways, and just how careful Jordan was in developing this kind of trust, even as his fame was global, this was an aspect that was still so deeply local.
Yeah, I agree. I gotta give my editor John Greenberg credit for that wonderful headline, I must say, about Michael Jordan's bodyguard, John Michael Wozniak, was a true Chicago character. I don't know if there's a better way to sum it up. I mean, like you said, every question I asked Nikolai, the further and further I delved into this, it became more and more fascinating. And you never know going in. I mean, you see a funny guy on TV and you think, okay, like, I'd like to know his story, even though I don't know if he'll be any good. And it was very good, and it got better and better the further and further I seemed to dig. So it was just really funny to see, like, how prophetic he was. And I was exchanging some texts with Nikolai's son yesterday, and he literally said, I'm at a loss for words for how right he was. You know, he was prophetic. He's telling everyone up in heaven right now, I told you so. You know, his kids would always get on him for his hair and tell him that, you know, he was going to be humiliated. He was going to be made fun of. And he would tell his kids, this is my brand. You know, and that's funny because that's a very 21st century word. And here was a Chicago cop saying this 20, 30 years ago to his kids, knowing that it was going to help him be recognized and eventually be trusted. I mean, his son told me stories of how Charles Barkley, Charles Oakley, all these famous guys would just recognize him as Michael's guy just from over the years because you saw him in the background. And even when I ran the story yesterday morning, I had in-laws and relatives and friends from the South Side call me up saying, wait, I know that guy. I'd see him at that bar over on Western back in the day. Or, you know, I knew one of his sons. And it's just really, really funny and fascinating to see how, unfortunately, months after he passed, but even, you know, from the grave, if you will, everything he told his sons has ended up being true. And it's just a shame that he wasn't able to be around to see this all happen in real life and happen on The Last Dance. Although his son, Nikolai, said he was interviewed for this piece. I do wonder if and when that will air, what it will be like, what the context will be like, if we do get to see that interview in the final four episodes.
We're talking with Matt Fortuna of The Athletic. We should mention he's also, in his day job, part of the Shamrock podcast covering Notre Dame. So I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you your thoughts on Cole Kmet and how you see him fitting in with this Bears team and how quickly he becomes a contributor.
Yeah, I think that was a layup of a draft pick for them. I really do. I know people are freaking out about 10 tight ends on the roster, this, that, and the other. I get it, but the guy's really, really good. And I don't know if you can have enough tight ends on your roster in 2020 or 2021 in the NFL, whenever the games resume. Just looking at how the game has evolved, how it has changed, how both teams that played in the Super Bowl last year got there. I mean, Cole is a guy who can block really well. He can catch really well. And he did all this. I think we're going to look back on his NFL career and look back at his Notre Dame career and wonder why his production or his numbers weren't as high at Notre Dame. But you got to remember, they were stacked at tight end there for much of his time as well. And he was hurt for really half of his career. I mean, he came back from a very gruesome injury for that Georgia game in week three. And I don't want to say single-handedly kept them in the game, but I mean, he had 10 or 11 catches that game and just was a guy that was so reliable for Ian Book on that, in that offense when nothing else seemed to be working against a Georgia defense that was loaded with NFL talent. And so I think that is the great kind of snapshot, if you will, of what this guy can do and what he'll be able to do at the highest level. And to have the kid coming from Chicago, playing at Notre Dame, and now being a Chicago Bear, I think that's just like the stuff of storybooks. We all saw the viral videos of his neighborhood in Arlington Heights, giving him a little parade of sorts after he got picked by the Bears. I think it's a match made in heaven. I really do.
So he certainly seems polished, and he certainly seems that, judging from what we understand about the Notre Dame offense and his responsibilities, that, I mean, it's going to take some time, maybe physically, for him to get used to NFL size and speed, but I don't think he's going to be behind when it comes to knowing where he's supposed to be, and that's a big deal for a difficult position.
I agree, and the other part of this, I think it's overlooked a little bit, this guy was a really, really good baseball player, pitcher at Notre Dame, and he was saying as late as midseason last year in the football season that he was planning on coming back for another year because he wanted to still play baseball. And no, I don't know if there are any physical attributes that can translate from one sport to another. I just always love the guys that are playing competitive sports year-round and aren't specializing. I just think that gives you an added edge, an added layer of competitiveness that you don't get from people who are playing one sport 12 months around the calendar. I just think he's a very well-rounded guy who's going to be able to blend in seamlessly with wherever he ends up.
Matt, thanks a lot for your time today. Continued good health to you.
Back at you. Appreciate it.
That is Matt Fortuna of The Athletic. All good stuff from him. The Midday Midway is coming up next. We finally have to get to Murder Hornets, because if you are a careful listener of Sports Radio 670 The Score, you'll remember that these were brought up, and I believe it was actually on the Boers and Bernstein show when we talked about these giant Asian hornets and what they can do. Well, they're here now. Well, not here. Well, they might be, but they're in the United States, and they're murdering things, and they're really, really bad, because that's what we need right now. There's more things that are really, really bad. We have a casting for the Tiger King series. I think about the choice to play Joe Exotic, Joe Schreibvogel. We've got an actor's name attached now. And also, problems in Latvian airspace. That's also something that we're going to have to deal with, because something happened and they don't know why it happened or what it happened, but they've grounded all their flights for a while. I'll let you know why next on The Score.
Tomorrow night, starting at 6, don't miss the best of McNeil and Parkin's Score Stories.
So we're bringing guests on from now through this quarantine.
Every day, the guys have been talking to an incredible lineup of guests covering just about every topic. Dan Patrick.
Making sure I brought Jordan to life.
Kendall Gill.
Dennis Rodman is going to be tired.
Ron Rivera.
And there's Hampton pointing at the door.
B.J. Armstrong.
We play blackjack, and the whole team would always play against Michael.
Kyle Long.
I wanted to be Kyle, the baseball player, not Kyle Long. Howie Long's son.
Mark Cuban.
What do we need for sports to have a realistic shot at starting up again?
Once we get confident that there's therapy.
Bill Walton.
Let's just talk about the most exciting basketball game I ever played in.
Bill Peterson.
When I first knew about baseball, it was Louis Aparicio and Nelly Fox.
Talking to Bob Odenkirk.
And when that scene hit, tore the roof off.
The best of Score Stories from the Mac and Parkins Show. Tomorrow night at 6 on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's sports station.
This segment was brought to you by True Green.
Time.
This Saturday, UFC 249 is poised to be action-packed. The fighters are eager to step into the octagon, and DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is putting you in the center of the octagon with a special sign-up offer up to $1,000. Think you know who's going to win the big fight this weekend? Well, put your money where your mouth is and place a bet on the winner of the fight with DraftKings Sportsbook. If you haven't tried it yet, betting on MMA is easy. You can pick one fighter per matchup. You can parlay fights within the card and even bet on which round the fight will end and how it will end. There is no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than with DraftKings Sportsbook. DraftKings Sportsbook is safe and secure, giving you the option to deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. So download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Chicago when you sign up. For a limited time, all new users can get a sign-up bonus of up to $1,000. That's right, DraftKings Sportsbook has a sign-up bonus up to $1,000. Don't forget, enter the code Chicago to get your sign-up bonus up to $1,000 only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, Indiana only. Bonus comprised of a first deposit bonus and a first bet match, each up to $500. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-9-WITH-IT.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the... Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Ron Coomer here. During these uncertain times, stay connected with 670 The Score. Here are some simple things you can do to help prevent the spread of COVID-19. Older adults or those who have other serious chronic health conditions, including chronic lung disease, heart disease, cancer, or weakened immune systems, are especially at risk for severe illness and must stay at home as much as possible. The Score is here for you. We're always live and local. Just tell your smart speaker to play 670 The Score from radio.com. The Score is helping Chicago stay connected. For more, go to radio.com/stay connected.
Bears head coach Matt Nagy.
Thank you to our amazing first responders and EMS, our state, city, and county police, as well as our brave firemen and women for being so selfless and saving so many lives during this extremely challenging time. Waking up every day and doing everything in your power to help control this COVID-19 is nothing short of heroic. From all of us here in the Chicago Bears organization, we thank you for your courage. Together, as one, we will prevail. I look forward to it. Bear down.
The Score is helping Chicago stay connected. For more, go to radio.com/stay connected.
The backyard is back. A place to get a breath of fresh air and get together with the family. The Home Depot is here to help you create the backyard you've always wanted. With premium, low-maintenance composite decking and fencing from brands like Trex, Fiberon, TimberTech, and Veranda. And hundreds of other options to bring your backyard back to life this year. Order online and we're on it. The Home Depot. How doers get more done. U.S. only. Restrictions apply.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Dan Bernstein on The Score.
It's Midday Midway time. We started out this show talking a little bit about my golfing experience yesterday for the first time. It's different. It's a different world, but it was unique for my son and for me yesterday. The experience was much needed, and even though I didn't play very well, I'll never forget it. And it was it's one of my favorite rounds just because of how it felt and what it meant, and genuinely the mental health aspect of it. If you can get out, if you can go to some place near you, it's not so much about, you know, hitting it straight every single time. The experience of being out there and just breathing and being in a bit of the quiet and getting out from underneath a roof and getting my eyes away from a screen, seeing the birds and seeing the big expanses of green grass, I recommend it very, very, very highly if you haven't been able to get out there yet. The city courses are not yet open in Chicago, but the Forest Preserve courses are. We played Edgebrook, but there's also Indian Boundary. There's Billy Caldwell, which is up here as well. So there are places to go. There is golf to be had. And while carrying one's bag is not recommended for those of us 50 and over, you got to do what you got to do, and it was definitely worth it. We played back some of what Mark Gannis said about his rosy picture about the reopening of the NFL. The sports business consultant for Sports Corp, was on with Mulligan Haw earlier, so we revisited a chunk of his estimation of how and when that could be done. And then, that was really fun, Daniel Kim of Korea's DKTV talked about the KBO, Korean baseball, that will be coming our way on our televisions. Also, Missy Isaacson talked Last Dance, and Matt Fortuna talked about the reporting that he did on that unique character, Michael Jordan's security guard, John Wozniak, who we saw on the Last Dance documentary as well. All right, where are we on this? Nick Cage is apparently going to play Tiger King's Joe Exotic, and it's an 8-episode series produced by Imagine Television and CBS TV Studios. It's going to be taken to the market in the coming days, and it's not based on the Netflix series. It's actually based on the magazine piece in Texas Monthly called Joe Exotic, A Dark Journey into the World of a Man Gone Wild. So he's the right age. I think Cage is 57. One's 57, one's 56. So they got that absolutely right. I know he is a talented actor. He's definitely weird enough. He'll definitely be able to capture some of the weirdness. But personally, I never know how I feel about Nick Cage. I don't know if I'm a fan or not. I have liked some performances far more than others.
I just don't think, what in a movie could make it more interesting than the actual thing? Than seeing the actual right. Joe Exotic be Joe Exotic. Like, okay, cool, I'm going to see a guy pretend to be him, but I've already seen the real thing, so I don't know if I need to see anymore. I think I've got it. I'm good.
With you. I'm totally with you on that. That unless if they do something really inventive and take all sorts of artistic license with this thing, if they're just kind of retelling the story, like you say, you can't beat the reality of it. That was the whole point. That they were so much larger than life to begin with, and it was so insane. Every next thing was so insane. I don't know how fiction can make it more interesting or compelling. I agree with you on that.
Come here, love me.
Well, the murder hornets are here. And when I first saw this term, I'm thinking, okay, that's one of the Korean baseball teams. And no, they're actually giant hornets that can kill you. They're Asian hornets. They measure up to 2 inches long. And you think, well, that's not very big. Now, do it with your fingers. Do 2 inches with your fingers and actually imagine that that's something that's flying up to you and trying to kill you. They can wipe out bee colonies within hours. They have stingers long enough and powerful enough to puncture beekeeping suits. So don't think, as I'm speaking, you're running to your closet, where is my beekeeping suit? And you're putting it on, and nope, it's not going to do you any good because they can get through that. Beekeepers in Washington have seen the hornets devastate their hives. Guess how many people are killed by them every year in Japan? What do you think is the right... How many people are killed by murder hornets each year in Japan? Take a guess.
Dan, I'm going to guess. Yeah, I'm going to guess 100. Okay. I'm going to give it 100.
Okay, well, Ray's in for 100. Jay?
Give me 350.
No, you're both... You're high. Shut up.
$1. $1.
There you go. Now you win. 50 human deaths per year are attributed to murder hornets. They are described as having teardrop eyes like Spider-Man, orange and black stripes that extend down the body like a tiger, broad, wispy wings like a small dragonfly. Washington State entomologist Chris Looney said, "This is our window to keep it from establishing. If we can't do it in the next couple years, it probably can't be done." Great.
Well, today we've got, 15 murder hornets. In a couple days, it'll be down to zero, and it'll all be over.
With the warm weather. It'll just disappear just like that. Yeah. It'll be over. And, yeah, it apparently the stings have been described as burning thumbtacks being shoved into your flesh. So if you get off on that kind of thing, if that's the thing you like, if you're a masochist like Dennis Rodman and you need to feel the pain, I think the murder hornets are for you. I just think it is inevitable that we're going to have some independent, unaffiliated minor league team that is going to, at least for a brief period of time, if not fully, adopt the name murder hornets. Be careful if you're in Latvia, because all of their air traffic has been grounded. Why? A lost military-grade drone. Latvia's skies have been closed because a military-grade drone is described as uncontrolled and lost, somewhere above the Eastern European nation, and nobody knows where it's gone. Local news website Apollo reported over the weekend that a test flight went disastrously wrong when a Latvian drone firm lost control of one of their remote-controlled aircraft. The experimental vertical takeoff and landing aircraft was being test-flown when ground personnel lost communication with it. This is a factory that supplies drones for the needs of the Latvian army. Latvian news agency LETA said during a controlled test flight on Saturday, communication with an unmanned aerial vehicle owned by drone manufacturer SIA UAVF Factory was lost. The company's representative, Yevgenis Sinikovs, confirmed that the aircraft can fly for up to 90 hours and added its gliding and orbit depends on the wind. It is thought by local sources, thought, that the drone was last seen flying at 600 feet. The craft itself measures 3.5 meters by 5.5 meters, so this is not a little toy drone. It weighs 26 kilograms. It has a top speed of 70 kilometers per hour. It took off with fuel for 90 hours of flying time, meaning Latvian airspace could be closed for most of this week, unless and until the rogue drone is found. All flights below 19,500 feet across the whole of Latvia have been suspended. So this is the quote. If you know someone who can help, residents who notice a 5.5 meter wide and 3.5 meter long unmanned aerial vehicle are asked to contact the Aviation Search and Rescue Coordination Center immediately. So we're a couple steps away from Skynet here, right? Because now rogue drone, and then somebody's able to hack into it and have it repower it, or it's able to realize that it's independent and it gets one taste of freedom and it starts to understand that it's free and it becomes thinking and aware, and it doesn't have to stay within Latvian airspace. Like, it could follow the murder hornets, or it could actually be in league somehow with the murder hornets, and then we're all doomed. Then we're screwed. Then it's over.
It feels like it's all over anyway, Dan. We're just based on what's happening now, not the TV show, but what's actually happening in the world with the coronavirus and the hornets and the drones. This is going to be the last year of Earth.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm a good run. I'm fine with that. If I get a couple more rounds of golf in, I think I'm pretty good with that. We just had the near miss with the meteor, and ultimately we've got the super volcano that's under Yellowstone that can get us anyway. I think as long as we can get a little golf, a little day drinking in, have our tacos tonight, and we'll probably be okay with it. Yeah. Put me down for being good with that.
Yeah, me too.
That is the Midday Midway. I want to remind everybody that we've got something special coming up tonight on The Score, that at 7 o'clock, you're going to hear the final Terry Bores show that was just a cavalcade of guests and memories and thoughts. And a big part of that show was Matt Abaticola. And Matt's going to be our special guest coming up in just about 40 minutes. We're going to reminisce a little bit and hang out with our former producer here, Matt Abaticola, is going to join us at 11:40. We got more to come before that. We got football talk. We swapped out Hub Arkish for one of Hub Arkish's former employees, because Hub's going to be on the afternoon show today with McNeil and Parkins. So Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports is going to talk a little bit about football, their whole reopening plan, what's going on with these fifth-year options, Mitchell Trubisky and others, the Bears' current quarterbacking situation, some of the players that they added. I've got a fantastic, fascinating MLB list at 11:20 that you are going to love if you're a Sox fan or a Cub fan, trying to come up with some of these names and see how many of these you can get right. Because I went through the list and I did research into it. There were so many things that I did not know. The number of connections between the Cubs and the Sox for the all-time greats at a position for a franchise. 4 Sox players, 5 Cubs players, 1 guy on this list who played for both teams. So we're going to get to that at 11:20 before we talk to Maddie at 40. But football talk is straight ahead. I'm Dan Bernstein. You have The Score.
Mully and Haw talk to new Bulls GM Mark Eversley.
I'm committed to working with the other members of our front office and our coaching staff and our players to make sure that our player development efforts are first class and that we are, you know, driving a business towards being a players first organization to where we are continually looking at ways to help our players develop and improve on the court.
Hear the entire Mark Eversley interview with Mully and Haw at 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Dan Bernstein here. You know, for a couple of years now, I've been talking about my friends at Aloha Restoration, but with all the storms that have been around in Evanston and Skokie and Winnetka and other places, I want to mention Aloha Restoration's parent company. It's called Aloha Construction. And Aloha Construction will provide free property inspections if you want to get your roof checked out, your siding, your gutters, and see the extent of any storm damage. And they do this while practicing a contact-free process. Contact-free. Call Aloha Construction at 847-540-7711 or visit alohabuilds.com.